Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Monday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is June 21st. Andy, how are we doing?
Brendan, I'm doing great. What a Sunday. That was a hell of a finish, right?
Great finish. Great weekend, more or less. Great Sunday afternoon at Torrey Pines. Hold on a sec. Let's wait. We have a flyover coming in. They're coming right now to lead off the podcast. Wait a minute. Well, we'll just have to continue on. How bad was that? How so bad it's good? Just everybody left hanging there with their pants around their ankles.
You know what my favorite part of it was?
What?
Was Rom turning around. Like,
you know, they all did.
Him looking around. The guy just won the U.S. Open. And then they somehow made him look like, you know, just like a fool. Looking around, and again, this is with the NBC staying with it, and you know, the swimming audience watching all this happen. You know, again, golf gets a valuable opportunity, and this is what the big audience sees:
a bunch of old guys staring at the sky, waiting for some planes to come through. Well, tick, 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 tick. Oh, that was great finish. But hey. We'll get to the U.S. Open in a minute. We need to clean up the big news of the weekend. Late breaking Sunday night here from Will Knights, our man on the spot. Official. Roy Sabatini is in the Olympics. He will be playing golf under the Slovakian flag. The Olympics...
Three years in the making.
The Olympics now takes on a completely new resonance here at this podcast. Maybe more so in a major or a Ryder Cup. We are all in. The BFB, complete end around, fraudulent nationality, Slovak, will be playing in Tokyo.
Do you think he's going to be carrying the flag in for that?
That's what I'm wondering. They got him. I mean, I don't know. There's probably some actual, you know, Slovakians that you know, may deserve the honor. But I just wanted to get the big news out of the way. The BFB will be in Tokyo. All right. Great Sunday.
Awesome Sunday.
It de facto is proof that Torrey Pines is a great venue. No, we'll get to that later. I can't stand hearing that anymore. John Rahm is our winner. He beats Louis Oosthuizen. Hard luck, Louis. Rahm's story, he's the first story. Story one. Birdie's the last two with the incredible putts. I mean, that's what it was, right? I mean, it was all putting. Some scrambling on 18.
And he hit the ball really good.
Right.
He hit it really good all day.
The end. No, yeah, I'm not talking all putts all day. I'm like, talking about right the two birdies at the end were bombing in putts. You know what I mean?
But that was a great, great bunker shot he hit on 17 to hit it where he hit it. You know, obviously, the tee shot on 18 set him up to get to, you know, into that bunker, which... wasn't a good spot, but
his approach shot wasn't bad. I mean, it was like a couple yards between being, you know, falling off into that bunker and like being right on the where you want to be, the first front half of the green. So it wasn't a bad approach shot. He just got a little wet.
You know, just in general, and this will kind of tie into Louis a little bit, but at the point when Louis was on the 13th tee, or he two putted 12, right? And he's five under. I thought to myself, God, if he plays even par in, there's no way he's losing this.
Yeah.
And he plays even par in, but John Rahm was just phenomenal. He obviously got through that stretch of holes from 11 through 12. 16, really, was just a bear. Just a complete brutal, like, you could birdie golf 13, but it was easy to make a bogey or a double or a... 8.
What did Morikawa even do? What did Morikawa make? I mean,
Morikawa made 6. He made 7. No, yeah, Thick Boy.
Thick Boy God, took 35 minutes on that hole.
Thick Boy was.
But he's absolutely
really...
fine. We'll get to his quotes in a minute. He's absolutely fine. Does not care. Completely fine. Should have been 7 or 8 under. Not bothered at all. Shot 44, whatever he shot. So, this felt like, look, he was the betting favorite for a reason.
Yes.
He played this course well. He plays every course well. He played well a couple weeks ago at Memorial. He felt, I don't know, I think we both thought Bryson was in a better position, but what it's like splitting hairs, right? Last night, but it's really splitting hairs.
What we talked about played out completely. Like, you know, in order to get, and I don't want this, it wasn't meant to be taking a victory lap, but in order to get past those three guys, like, you knew one of them was going to shoot even par at the right. top. And he shot the 67, which was a low, you know, tie. There's a bunch of them, but that was a low round of the week. He played a sensational round of golf. Like, this. Getting to 6 under was extraordinarily difficult. It required the round of the tournament, and he played the round of the tournament, given the circumstances.
Right, right.
Yeah, with the circumstances, he played the round of the tournament.
Sure. Or championship on the line.
One of my favorite quotes from him was, I kept firing at flags, he said to Todd Lewis after. Kept firing at flags on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Wasn't fat-siding, aiming at flags. You know?
What, yeah. Yeah.
Imagine that. Yes. Somebody going down the stretch trying to win a major and hitting the ball at flags, not doing mathematical dispersion patterns.
He did not go at the pin on 18 out of the bunker, but I don't understand. He's on a downhill in the bunker with the green runner away from him, water right behind the pin. And yeah. Like, it was the only play.
In a tie for a lead, too.
In the major, where he doesn't need to make a birdie to yeah.
With Liu Yusei having some of the hardest holes in major championship golf to finish, so, right?
He just threw one out there. The birdie putt wasn't, like, proof that he chose the right strategy, whether he made the birdie or missed the birdie putt. Like, there was only one play out of that bunker. You know, the bigger... Obviously, the winning putt is on 18. The putt on 17 was kind of ridiculous, right? I mean, a 6-foot breaker down the hill. That's the one that.
How about the putt on 15? So this is something I had in my notes. I mean, he got a really good break, and Louis got a great break on 13 with his ball staying up on the hill. But, like, this is, you know, kind of the difference between major wins and especially. You know, where you see such a bunched up leaderboard is breaks. Like, Rahm, that putt was going like 15 feet by on 15 and it caught the cup. And people were like, oh, it should have gone. Like, that thing was hammered.
Yeah. He had a few that saved pars from pretty moderate lengthy distances, right? I mean, there were several where it felt like he was going to make the turn and even after opening with 2 birdies. And he was like, he gave one back at 4, and it was like, he held on for like 4 or 5 holes there just to make pars after that.
So many times in major championships, we focus in on, you know, the great birdie putts.
Yeah.
Birdies on 17 and 18. But what it all is about is keeping that momentum going and not just letting go of the rope, because there's so many 8-footers for par that you have to make. And Louis made a ton of them. Like, that was, Louis made a bunch, and you know, Brooks, we saw he just didn't make some putts coming in. He had the 3-putt on 12, which kind of started a little derailment when he had things going. Like Bryson, we saw him kind of let go of the rope a little on 11 and 12, and then that carried over into 13. Obviously, the slip.
The slip. Good call by Shane Bacon on that. He had tweeted about it. I guess he's texted Azinger. He doesn't text us that kind of intel. Maybe he does. But yeah, he got a call out on the broadcast. He was all over it. So that led to a quick unraveling. Hey, talking about good breaks with Rahm. I mean, the ball out of bounds, but not out of bounds on the wall on 10. I mean, what is out of bounds if it's not off the property? Like, what? I mean, I don't understand. Like, it's a boundary fence, right? Is it not?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, like, he won. He's the best player. He's number one player in the world.
It was very confusing.
I'm not like suggesting that like nullifies the victory at all, but in the moment,
seems
that was
like
kinda,
you're suggesting something.
No, shut up. That was the kind of ridiculous. Isn't it OB? What are we talking about here? What's the distinction? It's the property line.
I don't know. It seems like that would be out of bounds. But, you know, I think the USGA would know. They're the governing body of golf.
Just yeah. A clean par on the card. I guess there are no pictures on the card. So that was a break for sure. One of his not great swings. JT did a similar thing. I think it was 10, right? Where he hooked it up and over the fence.
Yeah.
And it's rattling around in the steel mill or whatever that factory is. They got going down the left side there.
I think it's a scrib. I think it's Scribbs Hospital or medical records or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What else about Rom? Not surprising.
One question. Do you think he'll name his next child Tori?
He could. There's always potential for that. Tori is not extremely rare girl's name. No, you know, maybe spelled out that way. It could be. He's got a great history there. It's obviously very special to him. Special place to him. Congrats to John Rahm.
It's a very cool story. I mean, like just in general, I know it got beaten to death by the telecast, but. It is. It's a great story. Like it. I mean, in terms of certain things, like, and obviously, like whether or not him getting COVID was preventable, like that's neither here nor there. Like his family coming to meet his baby for the first time and him not getting to be there, that would suck. That would suck so much. Then you know the satisfaction to get it done on your first Father's Day. With your family there, with your baby there, like that was a really cool moment.
Look, he was super impressive talking about it afterwards. It's hard not to be unimpressive necessarily after you won a major championship. But this was the same tone of the same piece as Tuesday, whatever. He spoke before the championship. You know, he's, look, we're in a pandemic. What happened? I just knew good things would happen. He got a question tonight in the press conference talking about when he was in the scoring or he had just been DQ'd or WD'd from Memorial. He heard from Padraig Harrington. And Paddy was talking about how he had like a 5-shot lead in some event and got, I guess, probably signed a wrong card. And like Harrington talked about, like, not to do an Azinger here, who claims Mackenzie Hughes and Henley were better off for bogeying the first, but Harrington and Rahm like are a caliber of player where like you could, you know, the 1.6 million or whatever, you could, you know, they're going to be all right. They have long careers. And Harrington's message was like that getting DQ'd sort of like helped me more than probably any win could have. I don't know that that was the case for Rahm necessarily, but his approach seemed to think from that kind of kick in the nuts, a very good thing was going to happen. And he never bitched and moaned. He never whined about like being, you know, unfairly DQ'd. Like he took his medicine, so to speak, and got out and then, you know, spoke with incredible insight both before and after. And I think he's a popular winner, right? I think we've called him Hipster Rory. Like, or I know I've texted with Porter on this, but like Rory gets all the love for being the philosopher king and talking about the obstacle is the way and all this bullshit, or good stuff. I don't know. I'm not delegitimizing that, but Rahm just kind of like plays number one ranked world golf and like is a normal dude and doesn't. He's a hothead on the course, but he's really really smart and measured off it. What I love is. He always gets asked about his temperament and he reacts with anger to it because that's his whole, it's like, it kind of like a cyclical thing. He feeds right into it, but he's completely different player than the hothead on the course. So deserving.
Yeah. He always gives you like very candid, real answers. They aren't like the corporate mumbo jumbo speaking. Although he did fit in some nice Callaway plugs tonight, but it's a question.
You know, He sort of, I mean, not to take sides, we're not taking sides, but he threw a couple elbows at his old place in the course of praising his new place, right? Oh, like, yeah. Saying he could do things now that he couldn't before and all that. I was like, I don't care about any of that stuff, like, one way or the other. They all kind of hit
I don't
the ball,
know. I don't know enough to even comment really about whether that's true or not, but
no, right.
He definitely threw a couple of jabs in there.
It was a little more than just praise for the current place.
I've been enamored with Rahm since he turned professional. I mean, he was obviously the number one ranked amateur in the world. I was really going out on a limb, but you know, within about a week of him turning pro, I predicted him becoming a superstar, and you know, he did this in like the most John Rahm fashion. This win, Justin Ray tweeted out the stats, and he was 5th off the tee, 11th in approach, 17th around the green, 20th in putting. And that's what makes him such a special player. Is he just, you know, Bryson, he's got the power and he's got the putting. We'll see how long that lasts, depending on what rules changes come in, the green reading books.
Yeah, sure.
But the thing with Rahm, which makes him, you know, he's world number one now and could be around for such a long time, is just the all-around excellence. Like, he is world-class at every skill in golf, and I think that is so rare in today's players. Everybody's got weaknesses. I think him and JT are really the two class of this younger generation in terms of overall skill sets. You know, it shows in his record. I pulled some stats. He has 122 career professional starts. Some of those came as amateur. So, you know, some of those came as a sophomore 20. In college.
Yep.
His win percentage is 10%. He's got 12 wins. 13 if you count the Memorial. So that would bump it up a little above 10. He's got 63 top 10s. So he's over 52% top 10 rate. And he's only got 13 missed cuts. So, you know, if you count the Memorial win, he's got as many missed cuts as he's got wins, which that's why he doesn't miss many cuts, is because he's good at every frickin' thing, and it's rare that you're going to have a bad week at every single facet of golf. So he's spectacular. We've been waiting for this. I think after the last major, I said, I'm getting tired of waiting for John Rahm. I'm so happy he won. You know, I think this is a guy, this is a multiple major guy. I think that when you look at the other one major guys, this guy is in a different class than them, to be honest.
We say that. I think so, right? He's probably going to win 3, 4, 5.
Who knows?
We say that. Yeah. Doing those spotlights, you know, Davis Love III, floodgates were going to open after Wayne Foote, PGA.
John Rahm's not Davis Love III. That's utterly disrespectful.
I was waiting for you to say
John Rahm almost has Davis Love's career right now.
I understand. Look, he's been this, though, every step along the way, right? I mean, there are a lot of world number one ranked amateurs who kind of don't make much of a dent. He's been this as soon as he turned pro. He was a McCormick medal guy. He was college. And as soon as he turned pro, I think what was it, congressional, the AT&T thing, the Tiger tournament, like immediately top fived it. So this has been who he's been. Does the US Open have a type now, like a very exclusive kind of type of player? We've gone Brooksy, DJ, Thick Boy, Rahm. I mean, going back to what, Spieth?
Spieth at Chambers Bay, where the fairways were wide.
It's I don't know. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen was a minute away from winning it too, and he's not a poofer, but he's not the big boy power hitter of that mold. Harris English sneakily solo.
I'll say this about Torrey. I was a little surprised at how, you know, equitable it was on the leaderboard. So I think something I was definitely wrong about at the beginning of the week. I thought it was just going to be a slugfest. And I think it, you know, partially was, but there were shorter guys that were up there. So, you know, from that standpoint, I was definitely wrong. And I thought the tournament had a little bit of variety in the guys that played well. Granted, like 25 guys at one point today had a good chance of winning.
Yeah, it was a extremely cool last like 2 to 3 hours, right? I'm not sure the broadcast needs to be 9 hours, which we talked about on the live show, but the last 3 to 4 were.
There's no reason for it to be on at 11. It was on at like 11 my time today. I was like, what? When it switched from Golf Channel, I was so confused. I was like, what? Went to NBC at 11?
You're just like watching these guys kind of putt out, like in my practice round almost. It's just not doing much. But the last 3 or 4 hours were fantastic viewing, as I don't know, it's just an odd collection of circumstances, streakers, balls and trees.
Do you think that was Thick Do you Boy. Think that's what threw off Thick Boy was the streaker? Do you think that was the thing that set off the
it
double
wasn't a streaker,
and the quadruple, whatever?
Course stormer. That guy is like a fame whore. The guy who ran on the course. He's like something. I don't know.
No kidding. The guy that ran onto the golf course on national television, although he didn't get on national television, is a fame whore. What a surprise. Well,
he did some like KFT Monday qualifier and shot like 108. He's like got a history of being around. Should we go to Louis? Do you have anything else you want to say on Rahm?
I mean,
over under major total career. Like, let's do the first take Monday morning quarterback. You know,
I put it over under at 2.5.
Okay. Does this count as a full major, given it was a glorified PGA Tour event?
I'm not discounting majors.
I'm kidding.
We're not in the business. Although it was at a main tour event, one, you know, if you start discounting that, it gets a little interesting. You know, Elkington would lose a major. He won at Riv, right?
Yes. Halimony.
Halimony.
That's true. JT would lose one.
Who won the PGA National? Who won
Larry
that
Nelson, I think. Larry Nelson. Which, you've disrespected Larry Nelson, American hero, enough on this podcast. We don't need to be taking majors from him. All right.
Are you here?
So what did you say? Quick, 2.5?
2.5. Answer this, and then I got a question for you. Before.
All right. I'll go over for that. So it just seems. Whatever.
I think I'd go over. If I went to
majors
3.5.
Majors kind of fall into him.
If I went to 3.5, what would you say? I think that's a better number, probably.
Yeah, that's a better. It's a more like a toss. I think I go over. He's a little older, right? He did 4 years.
I mean, I think he's like 25, 26.
Yeah, I think I'd go over. I think majors just are going to fall into him, like they did today.
26.
He can look like absolute shit for like 9 holes, right? And like never, and he's just going to top five it still. I just like he's right there again come Saturday afternoon. Like he does that so many times at majors where you think he's going to throw his clubs in the lake or something. And then he's there Saturday afternoon. So,
yeah, I thought he was going to melt down yesterday when he hit the flag. He was so mad and then he missed the putt. Like that.
So I do think four is four may be it. I think that may be it. He'll join the Brooksy
four.
Rory.
So you
collection.
Get the Brooksy Rory. Do you think Rory's gonna get more than four? Unless I'll wait. My big question to you was: Were you deep down rooting against Rory because of the potential exposure the rotisserie chicken sandwich would get?
Come on, no, absolutely not. No.
Let's talk about Louis.
All right.
I'm Louis. Absolutely gutted. I love sucked. Louis.
I know.
I think like the thing, just the grace in which he handles all these disappointments is amazing. And I think about like how would Bryson handle this? And I think he'd act like a complete child, like during. Yeah. And I think about like Louis, like.
Damn.
Of course the fucking putt went in on 18. It reminded me so much of Westy at the Players.
I know.
Like batting
I couldn't believe that.
A birdie.
Like, what is that? After after he stones it on the after going in the hazard on 17, it hits like a good approach.
He had a great putt too. I mean, the telecast, I can't remember who said like everybody's been overeating this putt all day. He had to hit that putt exactly where he wanted to. The putt he hit on after the awful putt on 16 to knock it, he just got up there. It looks so uncomfortable the way he putts. Have you noticed that? Like how close the putter is to his feet? It looks like he's going to like hit his feet with his putter, and he just popped it right in there. I mean, God, he was so good. He was so solid. I wouldn't say he was good. He was just really solid. Like to shoot even par in that situation with the way the course was, you know, dishing out shit to everybody else on the back nine. He just kind of cruised through there, and I don't think he did anything wrong. He lost. He just got beat.
Oh, come on. Lose. A fader hitting it in the canyon on 17 is inexcusable. I think he doesn't can't do that.
Oberholzer pointed this out, and I agree. Like, when I've seen it, Oberholzer said, every time I've watched Louis, he's hit a little tight draw, and I agree, because when I watched Louis, I've watched Louis a handful of times, and he always hits a little draw off the tee. This fade thing is a bunch of bullshit.
That was a fade, though. Was it not? Wasn't that?
Yeah, it was kind of. It was a pull.
Didn't cut it.
But how about how exciting that tee shot was? The one time we got on the canyon.
Yeah.
That tee shot was awesome. I mean, we had Wolf hit it over like the one time. Rahm obviously bailed out. Right,
Thick Boy. Like, didn't Thick Boy go in there? I think Thick Boy.
Thick Boy went way in.
I mean, because they didn't know where it crossed, right? Because Tim like kind of stutter stepped off the tee, where you do like sort of the, are we going? Do we drop right here?
That was en route to Thick Boy's eight.
Yeah, that's right. That's where the eight came. Right, correct. No, but you talked about. I couldn't believe he was tweeting. Minutes after he got his heart ripped out again, I'll keep knocking on the major door. Gave it my best. Thankful to USGA. Enjoy the win, John Rahm. Nothing like a major win on Father's Day as a new dad. I mean, how would you know, Louis? But congrats. I mean, still magnanimous and all class, Louis Oosthuizen. And I felt terrible for him. But this is like, he was so solid, right? But this is Louis. He's like the mid. He's like, he's not Mackenzie Hughes. He's not Russell Henley. But he's never like the Rahm or the Phil or the guy. He's Louis. He's steady. He's much better than that class of player, but he's just not quite there. He never is. I think he's got his major though.
You know, that's he'll never be. I loved how Azinger brought up like not winning in America. It's just like fuck off. Yeah. Guy's coming up 18 and he's talking about how the South Africans were telling him about, like, it's just like, go, you know, just get the hell out of here.
Azinger loves talking about, he brought it up like four times today, aside from pressure. He loves talking about the entourages and all the guys, the people that players have around them now. He's like, that John Rahm, big John Rahm, he doesn't have his chef and his nutritionist, and his physio, and his swing coach, and his short kid. Not John Rahm, not Big John. He talked about the entourages of players that have like three or four times today. Loves banging on that as being some, I don't know, old school, I don't know, loner type. That Rahm did talk like, hey, I'm a field player. I don't know necessarily what that means. We know it means
firing at flags.
Well, they were asking him, like, when did you know that putt was going in? He goes, you know, I'm like a field player. I just, like, dripped it down there. And I don't know. It went in. So it wasn't like he did the calculated the friction angle or whatever the hell Bryson does. But, yeah, he just – Rahm's been outspoken already. Wasn't he on the record? His Green's reading book should be out, gone.
Yeah.
He's been on the record like a year ago or something on that. So, anyways, anything more on Louis? He got beat, you know. He got beat. He didn't gag it.
He didn't lose
17's debatable. 17's debatable. That's a bad bogey.
Yeah, but he made great pars on 13, 14, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, where other people were readily handing away shots, you know?
18 fully excused him from laying up, right? I mean, some people, it's insanity. Well, people think he should...
So, because he was over on that left side, if he had been on the right side, I think he could have played something up there, short right, and had something. Like, but he was on the left side. He had to cross the water, and he was
not
in the rough.
Lie.
Like, what? Yeah. The best case scenario is that he hits a miraculous shot that lands on the very front edge of the green and rockets over the green, and
to
he's chipping
back.
Down. Yeah, he's chipping out a thick rough downhill to that pin. It's like, I thought the play was to lay up and try and hole a wedge. I thought that was the best play. It was really the only play afforded to him.
He agonized over it. He's like, I want to go for it, but I can't.
Mackenzie Hughes hit out of turn.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
He was doing the J.B. Holmes,
except he had a major championship.
And he let his playing partners go ahead. He didn't force them to agonize with him.
For us swimming folks probably didn't like it. They want to watch their time trials. And they got Louis over here, like the Grammy folks. Anything else on Louis Oosthuizen? Just a tough luck runner-up for the South African. He'll keep... Oh, the Farb narrative. Can we drop it? Can we let it go? I mean, he hits in the canyon, and they go out, farm boy, farm, 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 tractors, farm, farm, farm. Just nonstop about how he grew up on a farm, likes the farm. We got to, like, tone it down. Find something else to talk about with Louis. They should be talking about Ocala.
There's a lot of things that you could talk about. They could talk about his UPS sponsorship and the UPS hacks.
The UPS.
Or the FedEx hacks.
Which didn't apply today. All right. Should
we go? Still might be true. The 600 FedEx Cup points on the line.
It hexed him? The extra 100 points?
He can't win more than 300 FedEx Cup points. He can't win 500 or more FedEx Cup points. It's the hex.
that may be it. I love that. Let's do an ad read for Athletic Brewing. This was our fuel for these late night podcasts with golf going till 11 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m., late into the West Coast. We leaned on Athletic Brewing when it felt time to, you know, have a beer, but you need to keep a clear head, kind of stay productive through the night, stay productive through the next day. We leaned on Athletic Brewing. It is our NA beer of choice. Like I said, I think last night, Saturday episode, we come by this honestly. Probably wouldn't be trying it if they didn't approach us about a sponsorship. But no bullshit. I'm glad they did. I'm glad I have it. I'm glad we have it in our life. Our promo code is SHOTGUNSTART15. The URL is athleticbrewing.com. I'm fully stocked for the summer on the Run Wild IPA. I have the Upside Dawn Ale. The Cerveza Athletica, I do not have. I had it at Kiowa for the Beverage Boys house, but I need to get my hands on that. I think that might be my favorite. That had the most like pop when I took the first sip, where I was like, whoa,
yeah,
this is legit.
It's delicious.
In a bottle.
Thanks to Athletic. They've been a great partner for a long time. They came around for these majors and made a lot of the daily pods possible. This is... a lot of work, and thanks to them for making this possible. And they got a awesome 15% off code for first time users, first time drinkers.
Shotgun Start 15. You don't need to get 18 cases. Just put 6 in the fridge. Put 12 in the fridge. Start there and see if you can make it a part of your rotation. All right, athleticbrewing.com. Shotgun Start 15. We've done the winner and the runner up. Where do you want to go next? Thick Boy Rory. Harris English sneaking his way into solo third. Guido,
honestly,
Migliozzi.
There's a point where I thought Harris English legitimately had a chance.
Got in the house at 3. Only just kind of sit there at 3.
It would have been amazing.
What did he shoot? 68? Yeah.
God.
I mean, who are you most disappointed by? Most surprised by in the bad way.
I'm most disappointed by Russell Henley. I was busy grinding on Don Henley's masterpiece, Lyric. Boys of Summer. I was going to have the full song written out for you to read tonight. You know, I was working on some Eagles songs. It was the first day of summer for Don Henley's kid.
disappointing. You were pretty proud of yourself on that. The early show or whatever, the tweet you had, it all seemed to work. First day of summer. Who are you most disappointed by? Who are you most surprised played poorly or faded or didn't at least punch till the last bell?
I mean, I was pretty happy about what happened with Bryson, considering he continued to launch balls into the fans without yelling four. Louis, all you need to know about Louis is he yelled four and seemed to have genuine concern about balls that were flying into the fans. I was most disappointed by Rory, though.
Thick Boy at one point held the lead on Sunday, and not like in the first hour, like midpoint. I think tied for the lead. He finished tied with Martin Keimer, still playing professional golf. Chris Baker, I think qualifier, Korn Ferry Tour regular.
No, he's Rikui, on the PGA Tour. I think he's like 208.
Okay. Rikua Hoshino, who we brought up in our qualifying show, and Hideki Matsuyama, who went out at like 7 a.m. this morning. He had the lead, tied for the lead. He ends up T26, Thick Boy. Why are you most disappointed in Rory? I mean, what was this? Did you expect more? Did you expect him to win? Did you expect him to shoot 66 and go?
It wasn't. It wasn't
off into the night.
It wasn't that he fell short. It was the manner in which he fell short. Like he didn't. He wasn't a factor after the 12th hole. 11th hole, really. He was just gone into the abyss, never to be seen again.
Is that because of him or because, I don't know, other people, you know, ahead of him were just better, like John Rahm?
Well, he didn't make putts today. He didn't do anything.
He made that first one, and you thought maybe this could be something cooking, right? He made the first one to get to, what, three or get to four?
Yeah.
What was, like, a 35-foot sidewinder? I don't know. The big one was 12, right? Just or 11.
11 terrible, was horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible three putt. He hit it close on that hole. I want to say I saw every one of his shots into 11, and I swear he hit it close every single round. And he just got he got nothing out of it. I mean, parred the first day. I think he hit it close the first day. Yeah, he stuck it the first day, made par. I mean, nobody could have hit better shots on that hole than Rory did. Rory, he didn't hit it on the second round, but he hit it great. You know, it's just like, God, you can't have a three putt there. That's the thing. You can't three putt on a long par three when you hit it to 15 feet.
You also can't have a double in the final round, right?
Can you have a double and a quad?
Not expect to win. I mean,
it just seemed like he was stuck in mud on the front nine. I don't know. He hadn't been there in a while, but he really wasn't there. I don't know. I don't know.
This was set up for the Prince of Pontevedra. You know, this kind of
set
up tour event, more or less.
These were the like kind of things that were disappointing. Is like the not getting up and down on nine, right? Like, that started this kind of tailspin, right? He had a really simple chip there, and he had to leave it below the hole. He hits it 15 feet past, and he's got the downhiller. It just narrowly misses. But, you know, you don't make a birdie there. I think he hit it fairly close on eight, doesn't make birdie there. You know, and then, you know, then all of a sudden he three putts on 11, and he makes double. It's just like, it's just sloppy. It's the same thing we talked about earlier in the week. Like, there's no player that's got like a greater degree. It's seemingly like he's so off the charts good, and then he hits these shots. You're like, how the fuck did you just hit that shot?
Well, he might not be like, he's just, he might not be sharp. As sharp,
he might
anymore.
Not be good
just through the bat. Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah. I don't want to be hot takey here, and I don't mean it. Like, he, of course, could win the next major. But
it's
like
the Seve theory.
For, like, 72 holes, he just might not be, like, through the bag sharp enough to be so constant and consistent, like a Rahm. Or a Kepka. I don't know.
The 76ers are going to lose.
No, I was going to. We're checking in and off.
Tough scene.
Really?
Yeah, it's over.
Oh, man. Hawks, Bucks? Eastern Conference Finals.
So, Hawks, Bucks, Suns, Clippers without Kawhi.
I don't mean to, like, I love golf. It is my, like, passion and my job. But watching the Bucks-Nets game last night after watching, like, the U.S. Open broadcast for the last 3 days, I don't want to jam on the broadcast, but, like, it was stark contrast. Like, you could not look down. You could not look down. I was trying to edit for Golf Digest, and, like, I had to turn the game off. Whereas with the golf, it's like, I mean, it's like this. Even if I need to be paying attention, it's still like a background thing. Anyways, what are we talking about, basketball? I don't know. Does he win another one? You threw that out there earlier in the podcast. Does Rory win another major championship? He's so young.
You want to say he's going to, but like at this point, I think you kind of lean towards no.
7 years, like, is a long-ass time. But Phil just won one after 8 years off or whatever it was. 9 years off.
I mean, here's the thing. Is like, maybe he was at his best at 23.
Now he's eating Domino's and rotisserie chicken sandwiches. That's discouraging. I don't know.
I blame the cameraman for putting the camera on his family.
One of the best tweets of the night. I saw Alex Myers, I think maybe a few others. When Rom picked up his kid, like Steve Sands just thought, well, wonders why Rom picking up Poppy McIlroy walking off the 18th green. Pretty good.
That was Baby Kepka.
Baby Kepka. Kepka. People keep, how are they still making that? It's like calling him Bruce Kepka. How are they still calling the baby Kepka? How is that still happening? All right, let's get to Thick Boy.
Yeah. You don't want to talk about Mackenzie Hughes' ball getting stuck in the tree.
Sure, we could talk about it. What do you want to say?
I've got nothing. I think they should put more cart paths around a golf course. It'd be good for you know, inciting some drama.
All of Canada's just caught up in a tree. Like that. Canada's hopes. Stuck in a tree. I felt terrible for the guy. He shot 77, which was, I believe I had that one on our pregame show. That was a question. Who would you expect to shoot 77? I feel bad for him, but he's regressing to the mean after a hot Saturday. Thick Boy. Somebody asked him. Did not use terms apparently he appreciated, because he quickly went, I'm not mad. I'm fine. This is actually great. I love it. I don't care at all. Don't care at all that I shot an 8 or I shot 44 coming in. Someone's used the term, how did it, I guess, get off the rails so quick, for lack of a better term? Well, according to Thick Boy, there could have been a better term. Quote, I didn't get off the rails at all. It's golf. People will say I did this, I did that, and it's just golf. I had plenty of times where I hit it way worse than today, and I won. It's just one of those things where I didn't have the right breaks happen at the right time. Couple breaks and then 44. What did he shoot coming in? It was 44.
44.
If 44 is a 42, what does that mean? A couple breaks. Right breaks, I mean, at, maybe, the right, maybe, happen at the right
maybe
time.
Maybe if the streaker, you know, maybe if he hits a patron, hits a fan that he's aiming for. Yeah. Gets a good bounce. That's what he's talking about. And on 11, things are different. If he hits a
You're
pan.
The karma police now. You're out there tweeting about karma. Mr. Radiohead over there. Karma police. You're tweeting about
when
how...
When he caught the bunker shot clean on 13, I mean... I'm not supposed to cheer, but I let out a good chuckle. And then it rested right up on the Stella case that somebody smuggled
in. Where does that come from?
Somebody
Who's
smuggled
got a case?
In.
Who's got a box of beer? How somebody does somebody totally get in the course with a club
they
and
they
balls?
Jumped the office park fence.
And that's how you can get in?
Maybe they paraglided and dropped in that way. Maybe they scaled the cliffs. Who knows?
They airdropped cases of beers in to friends, supplies. Well, another reason why I can't believe they're showing Rory's hotel balcony. You got yahoos running on the property with golf clubs, jumping fences with cases of beer. Anyways, it's just one of the things where I didn't have the right breaks happen at the right time. I could have easily gotten to 7-8 under today.
Easily.
Maybe if
the shot on 8 goes in, maybe he's counting that as a break.
I just wasn't fully confident with the golf swing, and I just got a little unlucky in the rough. I got unlucky in the rough and a couple other places.
Well, he slipped on the 13th tee.
That's true. He's got these fangs coming out the bottom of his shoes.
He shanked a shot on 17. Maybe he doesn't shank that.
That was the one. Granted, he's out of it at that point. But what was that?
Well, I think that's where a reporter, a fellow media member, was justified in saying it came off the rails a bit.
You're actually very pragmatic now, but at least for some of us, it would take a long time to shake this off. How long do you think it will take you? Right now? I don't even care. People think that. I've changed a lot attitude-wise and everything. It's frustrating in the moment when it's happening, but afterwards for me now, I don't really care as much. I've already won it. I've already won the U.S. Open. So he's definitely not mad. Everything's fine. Which, you know, if that is his attitude, then great. But he's kind of showing that not to be the case over the course.
His win probability was 33%.
Oh, my God.
According to the USGA. After the eighth hole.
Oh, T26.
It dropped to 0.4 after 13.
Unbelievable. The shank was the one that will stick with me. I thought it was his based on Saturday. Just the most.
Well, he hadn't
putts.
Made a bogey. I thought for a while he just wasn't gonna make a bogey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Torrey got him. That bit him.
That was a full-fledged.
Reese got him.
Full-fledged meltdown. Bryson
tamed Tillinghast, but he hasn't tamed Reese.
I wonder what Scotty Scheffler thought of playing with that circus. A little freak show. I thought Max Homa had a great tweet that Wolf is like a great dude and plays fast, and that probably helped Rom. Did you see that Homa tweet?
No.
Yeah. He was like, this was before Rom had won it. I think it was probably when he was, you know, in 17, 18, or maybe he just made the putt. But Homa tweeted like, Wolf is like a super good dude and plays fast. That is, it's not like the deciding factor, but every bit helps. So I thought that was a little bit of insight from someone who's actually inside the ropes. Anything else on Bryson? We good? I mean, what's going to happen?
I got nothing.
Royal St. George's, if it's blowing. Tim. I mean, this was his
He'll
kind of setup.
Similar to what happened at Kiowa, where you just eventually fade off into the sunset, where he's just on the range. I mean, the beauty for Bryson when we go to the British is it's the Open. It's light for so long.
That's true.
That he's not going to have to get his lights set up.
Yeah, ball's still.
When's he gonna have a lights guy? He should have a lights guy that comes out.
Yeah. That's a good point. Anybody else you want to cover on the leaderboard that you felt like gagged it or impressed you?
Morikawa's putting was terrible.
He could have gotten more out of the 70. Apparently Bacon was tweeting some play by play of in some insanity. He tried at 13. He was like 320, 315 out, and he went for it and hung up in the short side rough, and then he's like didn't get out of that. And then, you know, obviously it's not an easy birdie hole, but it's a par five opportunity, and he made a double, and that was that for Colin Morikawa. So
do you think six runner ups at majors should earn you an extra major?
No. Why?
Just
are you
wondering.
Trying to get Louis an extra major?
I just feel like this guy, he should be a Hall of Famer.
Jack Nicklaus might agree to that. Get him like Phil would 30 too. Some. Phil would too. That's true.
What about Brooks? What's your takeaway from the week for Brooks?
I think I try to be more critical of Brooks than most, who sort of give him a free pass for always. I don't know. He's extremely online, extremely like sort of high schoolish with a lot of the bullshit. I don't know. I don't know what his probability was, but he was right there again after playing in the final round, the final pairing of the final round, the previous major. I don't think I can get mad at him. I don't think I can say he sucked or I'm disappointed in anything. The guy has, like, not to make excuses, he talks about his knee, like, way too much. And this is the best I've felt. This is the worst I've felt. I don't know if I'll ever walk again. Like, you get that at every... But, like, I'm pretty sure, like, he had a significant surgery and maybe shouldn't have come back this year. And he's now played in the final group at the PGA and been one off the lead on Sunday at the U.S. Open. So... I don't think I can pop him too bad. The two bogeys in the final three holes were pretty bad, super bad, inexcusable. But like you're pressing to kind of try and catch at that point. He not a lot has changed in terms of my outlook on him as a major championship sort of alpha, for lack of a better word. You? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I think... I know some people are saying, oh, it's, you know, he's not backing it up. He's not backing it up. Winning majors is so fucking hard. Like, he's in the mix. Like, all you can do is get yourself in the mix. Like, we talk about Wikipedia top fives all the time. His aren't. Like, today he was very much in the mix with four holes to go. Like, he could have won that tournament. He had a bad three putt, you know, but yeah. You know, there he could have won that tournament, and I think that's you got it. He was on a abnormal pace when he rattled off four, right?
Sure.
And seemingly couldn't get beat, and now he's getting beat some, but I think he's going to get some more soon. Probably going to get one soon.
Well,
might get one in a month.
You are setting yourself up for a higher standard when you talk a bunch of shit and then don't win. And in golf, you don't win, like, whatever, 98% of the time. So, like, when he talks his shit at the Harding Park about DJ and nobody's won anything. I don't even know who these guys' names are, and DJ's only won one. And then he does the stuff with Bryson, you know, this year. It's great entertainment for us, but, like, when it comes time for the majors, like, you are going to be sort of judged more harshly if you don't win. And I don't know. I think the fact that he's been in it is not changing my opinion of him as a major championship sort of alpha in any regard. But again, he's out there throwing haymakers at people and not winning, so he's going to get a little bit of backlash for that. Anything else on the player front?
No.
That jumped off the page for you. Nothing else?
I think that's all I got. I mean,
Wade Ormsby. You don't want to talk about Wade Ormsby showing well.
I did want to talk about Brian Harman for about 15 minutes.
Bubba went 77-76. Dick Bland 77-78.
Oh, the game's within the game. I won both of them. Westy guided the ship home. Beat out Dick Bland by one. And Dylan Wu took down Fitzy.
Should we talk about that? Dylan Wu and Taylor Montgomery. You see Bacon had a tweet about that tonight on top of...
Yeah.
He makes the cut at the U.S. Open, gets nothing. I think he's now dropped from the top 25 or the cusp of the top 25 to like 28 or 29 on Korn Ferry.
Wu?
Points lit. Montgomery.
Montgomery? Wu's like right there too. Wu, I think, must be like 30, 31.
Brentley was talking about it and Bacon. So they both were penalized for playing their national championship. Not ideal. Yeah, Montgomery, He dropped from 24th to 28th because he didn't go to Wichita. And Wu dropped to 29th. He also made the cut at the U.S. Open. So
yeah, Wu finished 31st.
We've been shouting about this for 4 years. Don't need to do it again, but just more exhibits, more arrows in the quiver, whatever the terrible analogy is I'm looking for. So
does Torrey get another U.S. Open? Was Torrey validated by the leaderboard in the finishing final round?
Hey, do you think Bryson was pulling a Reed, patting his lie down? Shackelford tweeted that video out.
I mean, the way he looked at the cameraman ahead of him was really suspicious.
Hammering
just the way
down.
He reacted when somebody was looking at I don't know. I mean, seems
you got
like streaker something.
Distractions
I think it's
completely.
I think it's completely uncalled for. I don't think you should be able to just pat down your lie like that. I think, you know, it's one thing if you're grounding your club and checking how that is, and like you don't go up there and hammer down when you're grounding your club, you know. But that being said, I think that's the way a lot of golfers do it. So, yeah.
Torrey, I don't know. Depends if they can commit to a timed flyover next time, a more precise flyover. It doesn't seem to be getting another major. I don't know. I imagine the USGA will want to continue to pop the West Coast venues and do the primetime deal, as would NBC or whoever has the television rights down the line. I don't know. Look, the fact that there was a good leaderboard for a portion of time is not proof positive of a good course or a bad course, right? Like, if you get a stinker of a major at Augusta National, doesn't mean Augusta all of a sudden sucks. I don't understand why people keep tweeting, like, otherwise smart people are tweeting about the leaderboard being instructive of the course. This is like suggesting when, you know, Duke and Kansas go to the Final Four and they play in some soulless, gigantic dome and have a great game because, oh, the best freaking teams with the best players are playing for like the highest stakes. And like, oh, yeah, of course, a good game happened. Wow. That doesn't mean this dome where it happened is better than like Fogg or Cameron. And that's what this is. The best players showed up because of the stakes and played well because they're better than, you know, Russell Henley, I'm sorry, or whoever. Like, the leaderboard is not indicative of a course, good or bad. And why these people can't seem to grasp that like all of a sudden. And I'm not. I don't know much about architecture. I'm just following common sense. That this is somehow a pop. You can pop back at the architecture people who are trying to provide actual critical analysis of things and not just fluff everything and say this is good. Trying to provide what's good, what's bad, and actually say something negative because everything else is all fluff. Like, I don't understand why people take a screenshot of a leaderboard and say, take that for being critical of some. As someone who doesn't know much, and I'm going too long on this, but I think people have heard enough and probably would rather buy. I don't know. The people want to.
I don't
want to
talk. I don't want to talk about it.
But I don't know anything about architecture. The course looks dopey. The lake looks stupid. Everything, like a lot of it looks bad. I don't know. But the leaderboard, again, is not indicative of a good or bad course. That's all. That's my
two things can be true. A golf course can be great and you can have a shitty event at it. A golf course can be great and you can have a great event at it. A golf course could be bad and you can have a bad event at it. Golf course could be bad and you could have a great event at it. Like, there's all these things. There's a lot of positives about Torrey too.
Yeah,
but, you know,
sure.
At the end of the day, we saw 17 like on the canyon. Like, if they had more of that, the golf course would be out of this world. It's such an amazing place. And I know that there's stuff with the Torrey Pines. Like, there's a lot of holes that don't have Torrey Pines along the canyon that you can move the fairway over there. But anyways, like I'm exhausted. I'm so happy for this week to be over. I don't want to talk about this anymore. You know, I think my parting thoughts, where I'm very frustrated just with the world of golf, this is just my general frustration, is like, I hate any food critic that doesn't say anything critical, like that just says every restaurant's great. They aren't somebody that I would have any interest in reading them talk about food if they say every place is great. If a movie critic tells me every movie is amazing and should win an Academy Award, I'm not going to read them. Like, so, like, if you have some critical analysis is great. Like, it's a part of the world. It needs to happen more in golf. Golf in general is so bland and vanilla and void of this. It's like, we see it on the tour. We see it in a telecast. Like, Azinger talks about how every shot's the hardest shot in the world. It's like, sometimes these guys hit bad shots and just say, he hit a bad shot. You know, yeah. It's not always pressure. Yeah. You know, Dan, just so much pressure. These guys never felt anything like this pressure. It's like, or they hit a bad shot. They just hit a bad shot. You could say, that was a bad shot. That's what made Johnny Miller so great, was he say, oh, they hit a bad shot. And people hated Johnny because he said stuff like that. But you know right. what? He was really freaking good at what he did because he did say that. And that's the point that I'm netting out at this point. It's like, you know what? Like, I can say, I'm not insulting. If you like the course, I'm not saying anything insulting to you, okay? I'm just pointing out what I don't like about the course. And this is not just me. It's other people that had critical things to say. We can say the course isn't great. We're not insulting you because you like the golf course. That's not an insult to you.
Yeah. Yeah. But you could understand why people, like, if it means something to people, that they feel
it's a cool point. Like,
but it's not your job to worry about that. It's not your job to worry about that.
It became like resentment. It was like a mob against people. It's like, I don't understand where this came from. Like, me just telling you what I think about something infuriated an entire thousands of people that were, you know, then.
One specific thing I wanted to bring up, which I thought was cool. Nine seemed to be shaved down off the back. And JT nuked his, like, I don't know, 3-wood. And, like, if you're going to go for it in two, that's great. That's a high risk, like a high degree of difficulty to pull it off. And he hit it too hard, and it rolled over. And it didn't just roll over. It rolled down, and he had to hit a great sort of, like, not a great, but, you know, he had to hit a good skipper. And it went a little too far, and he squandered a shot. Like, I thought that was fascinating to see where the ball rolled off and down the green. I thought, oh, why don't we get more of that? And then, you know, as you talked about extensively, like, a lot of holes just have the
how about Koepka on 14?
The rough right there. Yeah.
Do you see that?
Yes.
And the crazy thing, too, is, like, people were then saying that it's for mower safety. If you go play there on a regular day, the rough's way shorter than that back there, and it's auto gone. Anybody that misses left or long of that green is in the canyon. It was just a big buffer down there. I don't understand why they thought that was a good idea. Like, who's making these decisions? Like, who doesn't walk around and say, you know, maybe we shouldn't have this 7-inch rough over here because it's going to stop the ball from getting in the canyon.
Right. Another cool thing was Rom putting from the front of four. Like, having to, like, I don't know, it was just different. Like, bringing some of that out, like, option, I don't know, he hit a terrible putt. It was bad. But he had to decide on different things. He tried to roll it up the hill and on. I just, like, again, I think your larger point, which if you didn't listen to all our podcasts all week, we're not going to rehash all of it. You had a great point yesterday about how it just created constipation, bunching. Like, you couldn't necessarily always tell who was playing the best golf. And we low round of the week was 67. High round was what? Did it settle at 82? Did it go over 82?
82. 67. Okay. So the lowest spread in the history of the U.S. Open between low score and high score. In general, too, like, I think John Rahm was the best player in the tournament, but do we really know?
Yeah.
He played the best on the back nine on Sunday, but like, it was anybody's tournament. And I think that makes for a really entertaining product. And that at the end of the day, that's what we're in for. But at the same token, if you're trying to determine a national champion, you want it to be clear who the best player was. And I'm not sure, like, I'm not going to take away anything from John Rahm's win, but like, was he really better than Louis? Do we know? And sometimes it's two. And like, frankly, like until the very end, like he wasn't really better than anybody. Like if we could trot it out and played another round tomorrow, I don't know if John Rahm wins.
Everybody, it's just kind of like sparring. Like
we'd be in the Mayweather. Same, we'd be the same like boat if we go play tomorrow.
Yeah, the exact same boat. I'm not putting words in your mouth. You let's judge a statement from a listener. He's perfectly anonymous. DNB 5520 DMs. And you can agree, disagree in parts. No rain and the setup was awful. Hard to see Mike Wan actually making it harder in the future. All the whining pros have won and made this a glorified tour event.
I was going to
ask you. Those are some spicy words.
So I was going to ask you because Garrett tweeted something similar. He said the PGA Championship and the U.S. Open setup philosophies have slid significantly toward each other since 2019. The PGA, because it doesn't want to be seen as a pushover, and the U.S. Open in response to player criticism of Chambers and Shinnecock. I think it's spot on.
I would say, yeah. I'd say John Bodenhamer does a good job. He does a good job.
They're afraid, though.
But they haven't had any kind of wailing or controversy in Pebble, Wingfoot, or this, right? I don't know. You think they're scared? They want to edge closer to being a tour event than being antagonistic USGA. Not that they are a tour event, but edging closer to it. This one, because it was on an actual tour course, was exceptionally like
nearly identical scoring averages.
Scoring averages, wait. Could they have made it harder? Like this DNB says there was no rain. You still have the marine layer kind of impacting play. Could they have made it crispier? That's maybe an agronomic question for somebody else. But they did sort of have, they didn't have a rainstorm come through like you might in the Mid-Atlantic in June. So did they kind of set it up more benign than it needed to be to get that scoring average? Or is there just only so much you can do with Torrey Pines? So.
I mean, if they want to set it up, they could have set pins in some little bit funkier spots. They could have gotten the greens a notch or two firmer. But at
get
the
Tom
end of
Meeks
the day,
out there.
Here's the thing.
300-yard carries to the fairway.
The golf course just doesn't have a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
Like, okay. It is what it is. And that's why it plays the same every year at the Farmers.
It's true.
The rough short is still hard, and if the rough's long, it's still hard. Like, I mean, I just think it mutes skills.
Yep. Okay.
I'm happy round one. But overall, and it was a really fun Sunday. You know, when all the guys are coming down the stretch, and Kyle Robbins wrote that piece a few years ago when it was at Belrive for SB Nation that talked about, like, you know, how players can make it, you know, essentially make a course irrelevant. And on the back nine, it didn't matter where they were playing, right?
Right. That was exciting there. Okay. Kind of feels like a good end to the U.S. Open. We're off to the Country Club of Brookline, I think, next year. And Royal St. George's. Travelers up immediately. What are the odds Brooksy makes the cut there?
I don't know. Rory's playing too. Rory, he's going to watch the putter.
Field.
The putter.
Lineup?
Can he putt? TPC River Highlands is always an annual tradition. What happened on the LPGA? I haven't even known.
Oh, Nelly beat Leona Maguire by two.
Okay.
At Wichita, Harry Hall, kind of a Bryson imposter. He's got the Hogan cap. One.
Really?
In Wichita, beating Curtis Thompson by a shot. It's a rough couple of weeks for the Thompson family.
Yeah. I was gonna say the same thing.
But yeah, Nelly Korda won by two in Michigan, Grand Rapids. All right. Thank you guys for your continued support. Long week of podcasts. We know it's a lot of minutes, hours even, but we hope you enjoyed it.
Try to do our best. We have some spotlights too.
While keeping our sanity. I would encourage you to go back, listen to the spotlights. You know, those are evergreen. O2 Beth page. Especially with us maybe never going to Muni for a long time again after this one. O2 Beth page and Lee Trevino part one. Part two may come, I don't know, 2025, given the rate we just had this week. But we appreciate your continued support. Leave a review if that matters. I don't know. Support a sponsor like Athletic Brewing. And yeah, write a review. Do that if
reviews
you
are fun too. I like reading them.
Oh yeah, there's
I get an email every day about review about. Reviews,
oh, you do? So.
Yeah, it's fun to read.
Our last negative one was like, obese journalist thinks Patrick Reed is buff. 1 star. Which, please don't give bad reviews, but I'm amused by that.
If you don't like the podcast, give a bad review. If you got critical, you know, Andy hates Torrey Pines. I like that's not an every week thing though. You know.
Obese journalist thinks Pat Reed is buff. 1 star. A, I'm not obese anymore. I'm just overweight, apparently, according to the index. And B, I said Pat Reed looked... I was so half-hearted in that take that he looked... His shoulders look a little built. This was like Kapalua or something for a split second. I reserved judgment to take it back like within the next day. But thank you for that review. Either way.
To be fair, a lot of our negative reviews... come about my voice. So,
well, then,
you know,
then we don't want you. Get the hell out of here. Because, like, so, Tori, it's not changing. That's what it is. So, right? All right. Thank you guys for your support. We'll be back with the regular kind of Wednesday episode later this week.